the chances are it probably won't work for you. And you got to figure out a way to kind of take the ideas they have and make them work in your situation, right?
Welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbaugh. This is a podcast documenting the journey as self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast. This week, Dave and I are chatting through a couple of updates and then talking about distractions. So, Dave, how are you doing this week?
What? I'm sorry, did you say something?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, distractions. Our life is filled with distractions. Sometimes I feel like my whole freaking week is nothing but just a series of distractions that I've strung together in a vain attempt to be productive. So I can't wait to talk about that part of the episode. That's for sure.
Yeah, I know it's really something. I mean, I think in a way that the world we live in is conducive to it a little bit, and the tools we use make it worse. Things like Slack. But we'll get into to how to kind of flip the script on distractions and turn into a positive thing. But it's been a bit since we've done some updates. So what's going on with your business, man?
Well, so I am still hitting the cold email with recapture. I have the time that it takes for somebody to go through the full campaign is like a week and a half. So I did one round with a bunch of people, and it looks like my latest campaign is doing slightly better, meaning I'm getting better response rates and open rates. Still not getting a lot of customers signing up, though, so that's a little bit concerning that my campaign is not hitting the right people. But I now have a huge list that I'm about to pump through Bluetick and get that out and then get the final result, because I definitely have proved that my previous cold email campaign just isn't going to cut it compared to the new one here. I think the ask was too big and people were just like, no way. So this one seems to be better in all those regards, but whether they actually turn into paying customers or not is a different story. So I would say by the end of May, I will definitely have a conclusion as to whether cold email works for recapture or not.
So you moved to more of a slow dating service rather than asking them to get married on the first date?
Totally, totally. Yep. Yeah, it was more like I can't think of a pithy thing to go in there with the dating service. So yeah, maybe it's a little closer to Tinder and a little less like eHarmony.
Okay, right on. Okay.
Yeah, but definitely not Grindr, I guess. Yeah.
So I mean, the interesting thing about that is I think you probably are seeing more opens and more engagement, but if you're not doing any more sales, then it really doesn't matter, right? So that's an interesting thing to look at.
Yeah. So in the end, it doesn't really matter how many people open it, how many people click on it. If they don't, you know, sign up for your service or engage with your product, then you're either sending it to the wrong people or you've got the wrong message. But having spent a lot of time with the message, it feels a lot less like the message is wrong and that maybe the audience isn't quite right. So there's some other ways I think to approach it. I mean, it just could just be that cold is not working for my set of customers. Like they don't trust you out of the blue, and you're asking them to give you something where they need to know you a little bit better than they do when I send it out to them. So yeah, don't know.
What resources have you found to be most helpful in kind of crafting your message and figuring out the best ways to kind of run these campaigns?
Well, it's been a mix of things. I wouldn't say there's any one thing that really sort of does it. So, I mean, there were tons and tons of articles about cold email, and I, you know, started out by just randomly picking stuff, throwing it into emails and seeing what happened. And then some of those things worked and some of them didn't. So it just sort of depended on what resonated with the audience. And then there was the whole short form versus long form, and I kind of experimented a little bit with that. And it seems like the shorter the email, the better response rate I'm getting on that. So I think that tactic has proved out to be pretty good for my audience. But in terms of, like, you know, is there some magic tool or magic template or something that's working better than anything else? Not really, you know. It's like I had to kind of hodgepodge a variety of things and just sort of test them out and see what what worked with the audience, because every single article I went to saying these things work, and I tried them out and I'm like, eh, that one didn't work so well.
No, they didn't.
Yeah. Hey, maybe that worked for you. That's cool. If it worked for you, great. Didn't work for me. I got to try something else. So, yeah.
I think that's a good point.
Silver bullet. There's no silver bullet. Sorry.
No. I think it's a good point. Is that there's a lot of things that our friends and other people in the industry talk about as things that work for them, whether it's email or churn reduction or content marketing, and that's all great because it's their specific experience and context. And the chances are it probably won't work for you. And you got to figure out a way to kind of take the ideas they have and make them work in your situation, right?
Yep. Yeah.
No silver bullets, unfortunately, other than a Coors Light.
Yeah, well, that's a silver bullet I'm not into. So let's see what else. Oh, today I was crafting the price increase email for Business Directory and AWPCP. So this is going to be a real interesting show. I'm going to give them a 6-week lead time and give them the warning that their support prices are about to double. And I actually borrowed, let's say liberally, I borrowed liberally from the one that Nick Francis sent out for Help Scout when they were increasing their prices from $15 to $30 a user. And I thought, you know, I've never been happy about seeing a price increase email. But when I got Nick's email afterwards, I was like, you know, price increases suck, but at least I feel better knowing why this is coming and the way that he phrased it and the tone that he used and just everything about that email was like, all right, that's a pretty damn good price increase email. So I stole it. I completely saved that email and I basically copied it and started and changed the template to be more about my plugin and less about Help Scout and more about the support renewals and less about the monthly fees and added in my features and boom, I got myself an amazing email, if I do say so myself.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Well, we'll see. I'm sure having done this before, I know that I've got an inbox waiting as soon as I send this out that's going to have, I don't know, let's say at least 5 angry customers that'll come back and be like, I can't believe you're doing this, raising the prices. You suck. You promised you'd never do this. You're a terrible person. You kick dogs and bite puppies and whatever. Okay.
Right. No, I mean, I think, yeah, I know that Pippin went through something recently with price increase for all of his products, I think, or most of them. And yeah, I mean, he wrote extensively about it and what it did to his business and everything. And I think that for me, just charge more doesn't really make sense, but charge what you need to charge is maybe how we should say it. Because just charge more is I think a little kind of arrogant, right? Like, oh, just charge more because the fucking customer has no idea what they should be paying or something. That's not really fair, but like charge what your business needs for it to be successful. And if, like in Pippin's case, and I would imagine in yours, for you to grow the plugin to have it do more and offer more to your customers, then the customers need to pay more. And I don't think it's unfair. And it sounds like you're crafting the email in a way that says, for us to do a good job for you, this is what we need to get paid. If it's not your cup of tea, then that's cool. You can move on to another solution.
Yep.
But if so, this is what we need to continue doing what we're doing.
Yeah. What you said, but about 1,100 words.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's great. No way. Really? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a long one. It's a long one. Seriously long. And, I've broken it up so that, you know, guys like me who are scanners can catch the salient points in here and with bolds and underlines and stuff like that. So hopefully it works, you know.
Nice.
I've put out some pretty solid reasons in there, you know, with hiring the new staff and, you know, we're just not making as much headway on development for new features and stuff like that. So got to do something to move that forward. Been talking about it for a while, so just got around to that today. I'll get it sent out and then they'll get their 6-week notice. And I'm sure on July 3rd, when the price increase goes into effect, and then they're like, I didn't hear anything about this from you. Really? Mm-hmm. You sure about that? Because I sent like 4 emails. Yeah, that's always how it goes. Like, you just look at your open rates and say 40% of the people opened your email. That means 60% ignored it. You know, it, probably a little less than that because the little open beacon doesn't always trigger in all cases because of mail clients. But the bottom line is there's a lot of people just ignoring your email and they get surprised by it. So,
yep.
What you gonna do? What you gonna do?
Interesting, interesting. Well, I made my fair share of customers upset this week myself, so I can feel nice. what you're walking into. Yep.
Nice. Pissing off customers for the win.
Oh man.
What happened to you this week?
So we launched our big update to Seriously Simple Podcasting, our hosting platform, Seriously Simple Hosting, and overall. All things considered, it's actually going well. We have paying customers, and people are publishing their podcasts, and they're successfully onboarded and all this kind of stuff. So at the end of the week, we launched a week ago. So at the end of the week, it's overall been a success, I feel like. But the first release of the plugin that we published to almost 20,000 sites was broken. And
high five!
Yeah, it was great. And started breaking people's sites in the middle of the night for me and my developer. So I learned a lot of things. So one is, don't release a plugin right before you go to bed. and two, I mean, just we tested the hell out of it. And I mean, the last month has really just been testing. So at its core, it's very solid and it's doing a good job for what it's supposed to do and who it's supposed to kind of be for. But I know you're just laughing to yourself right now hearing me say all this, but just all the things that you don't expect outside of the release being broken. And we fixed that within a couple hours. But the unfortunate thing, and I was explaining this to my wife, she's like, why, if it's fixed now, is it not just fixed? Why do you still have people that are having their websites be broken? I was like, well, with WordPress, like, you send this thing out and they inject it into their website and their website's broken. And the fact that you fixed it doesn't really matter. It doesn't sort of like trickle down to their site. They have to do something or, you know, disable the plugin or rename the folder or to get it to not break their site anymore. So yeah, we launched Tuesday morning early, and I mean, through Thursday was just, I was in a bad place, man. I've
been there. I feel your pain. As you're talking, I have flashbacks to the theme release that we did about a year ago, and I was like, oh man, it was just like week after week of Blitzkrieg hell. And yeah, I'm glad that you were able to get that nailed in a couple of hours there. So that says a lot, I think, to the quality of the release and how fast you were able to respond. So good for you on that one.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, learned a ton, obviously, with testing and releasing and all the, and communicating. I feel like I communicated really well with our customers, but it's just impossible. I mean, you know how it is. I mean, WordPress is, you have people from developers as good or better than my developer maintaining sites, and then to people who have no idea what WordPress really is and what FTP is, trying to manage support for all of those different types of people. It's really tough. So I mean, we have a lot of documentation out there, and at this point everything is, with the core kind of issue is pretty well understood, but just, I mean, PHP versions and theme compatibilities and you know, other plugins using AWS offloads are creeping in now. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, so anyways, long story short, Seriously Simple Hosting has been launched. We have like a dozen paying customers already, which is awesome. Some of which are paying yearly, which is even better. And the tool works like a champ. So this podcast, by the time this is launched, probably this podcast will be running on Seriously Simple Hosting. And it's awesome. I mean, migrating customers over has been pretty easy, aside from really kind of screwing the pooch with the release. I've been pretty happy with it, but just spending an enormous amount of time on support in the last week, even aside from kind of the release stuff. It's just a major thing. We introduced a lot of new stuff, and I think, you know, anytime you do that, shit breaks that you have no anticipation of. So we're learning, yep. But overall, it's been a learning experience and a good experience.
So for a few days it was seriously stressful podcasting.
Yeah, for sure. And
or
of course,
seriously stressful hosting.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was just, yeah, it was bad. And you know, you get up and you look at your email and you're like, whoa. Like, 60 emails. This is this is
not
not good.
good.
Not
not
good.
Good.
I don't like being this popular.
Well, I did have a release about a week and a half ago where it was all my fault. Like, this is 100% on me. So my developers had put together a great release, sent me all the code, sent me the release notes. And of course, it's my job to just put it all together, push it to SVN, push the button, right? Pretty stupid. Anybody could do that, right? Well, somehow I managed to fuck it all up. I did a sync between Git and SVN like I always do. And then all of a sudden, I did a revert on SVN, which put all the source code back to the original version, and then it wouldn't resync for me again. And I'm like, oh, shit. And there was a number of files. Like, they moved some stuff around. They changed directories. And when I saw the number of files come up, I panicked a little bit. And yeah, I made some dumb moves, followed by some really stupid moves, followed by some just fucking idiotic moves. And then in the end, I had to, like, by hand restore the tree of 400 some odd files by copying them to make sure that each directory had the right set of files in there and that I didn't wipe out the SVN ignore, the .svn folders and the git ignore stuff. And, oh, God, it was a nightmare. But the reason I found out about this is that I did all this testing. I pushed it up locally. Everything worked fine with my version of it taken from Git. And then I moved it over to SVN, checked it all in. I thought I had fixed it all, pushed it out there. Sure enough, an hour later, the emails start rolling in. Fatal error, fatal error, fatal error. I'm like, oh, hell. Mm-hmm. So it was a Friday afternoon, I think.
Of course, yeah.
So, yeah, we're like in the middle of dinner, and I tell my wife, I got to go. I got to deal with this, or this is going to be a nightmare tomorrow morning. She's like, okay.
Yeah.
So, went in my office. 2 hours later, everything was fixed. But, man, that was one stressful 2 hours. And I only had a handful of emails, but, man, I staunched the bleeding. It was like I hit the artery, sewed it back up, put the stitches in, stuck a Band-Aid over it, and I'm like, nobody sees anything. Hey, look at that. It's all working great.
Is there not a tool to say, like, okay, take what's in GitHub and put it in SVN? I mean, that would be, like, such a great tool. Every WordPress plugin owner would use it, right?
Well, for those that are using Git for their own private repos. So there are some solutions out there for shell scripting and stuff like that. And after we went through this, one of my developers was like, hey, did you know that there's this thing over here that somebody already built to do this? And I was like, no, I didn't. Right. And thanks for letting me know. But, I mean, the tool that I was using, I use a tool on Mac called ChronoSync. So, I update the GitHub repository. When they've checked everything in, I just do a Git pull on my local machine, sync it up, run ChronoSync, which basically copies anything that changed after a certain date and dumps it over into my SVN target directory. In theory, that works great. Like, I've been using this for, at least 3 years at this point. Of all the releases that I've pushed out, I think this is like the second release in, figure I do about 80 a year. So of 24, I've had two that got fucked up because of this. Mm. So that's two more than I really should. But, there were 22 of them that went okay. Maybe more. I don't know. I'm not really tracking that. I'm just doing some guessing there. But, yeah, I mean, we could do better on that. So he pointed out that shell script and actually did some adaptations and figured out some stuff that doesn't belong in our plugin anymore and cleaned that up. So I think for the next release, we'll try the shell script. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, 10% ain't good. Screwing up 10% of your releases is not no one, including you, I know, would be happy with that. For me, first time kind of, making it, we've released a couple of minor releases before now. Of course, our big releases with our big product. Anyway, it was a learning experience for me. My developer was totally bummed. He was like, fuck, man, I know I screwed this up and screwed kind of the business side of you releasing this big product up. I'm really sorry. Da, 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 da. I'm like, yeah, man, it's cool. So we're working on it. And yeah, so I have to say, overall, people using it are really happy. Some people came in and kicked the tires, and it's not really their cup of tea, and that's fine. I mean, it's not for everybody. But I feel like I was telling my wife earlier, I feel like we're just at the point where I can start really kind of injecting people into the funnel for this, which is cool. That's kind of the whole point. So all in all, I learned a lot this week. I'll say that. we'll leave it there.
Yeah. You either win or you learn, right?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. Nice, nice.
So my one other update, I have a fun new project that I'm starting that I'll talk more about in a couple weeks, I guess, but kind of looking to scratch my own itch around kind of the problem of invoicing customers and getting paid. We invoice some of our customers through Podcast Motor, and for the most part, it works okay, but both our customers and I would like a simpler solution because we invoice them every month. And a fair number of businesses do. And so we're looking at developing a tool to do a better job of getting paid by your customers. So if anybody kind of experiences this problem or knows anybody that does, we'll include a link to kind of a survey that I put together to gather some more information about this. If anybody wants to contribute and kind of share your thoughts and experiences with how you invoice customers and get paid, I'd love to hear from you. I think the concept we have in mind is pretty cool and would love to kind of share it with you. So we just have a type form set up to gather a little bit of information about how people invoice their customers and get paid. If you want to share, that would be awesome. We'll include a link in the show notes.
Cool. Cool.
Yep. So what are you talking about this week?
We are talking about how to turn distractions into opportunities. So the reason that we came up with this was not because we actually were looking at our distractions and said, hey, we could turn these into opportunities. Brian Castle, our friend who's been on the show before, sent out an email and was talking about how he specifically had turned some distractions into opportunities and then realized that this was something that he could use in his business more generically. So he sort of sent out a little mini blog post about this, and both of us thought that was pretty cool. So we thought maybe this would be a great thing to discuss on the show, what kind of distractions we've used in the past and turned them into opportunities, because we're just in a world filled with distractions. They're not going away. There's no way to insulate yourself all the time from everything that is distracting you. So the question is, if you're trying to increase your productivity, how is it that you can, instead of looking at distractions as like these evil little gremlins that are, you know, taking you away from this tiny little slice of bandwidth that you have to try to get things done, how can you use those to be more productive?
Yeah, no. So I love I can totally relate with Brian's story here in his blog post, and I love the framework that he kind of puts together towards the end here to say, if you kind of say that these distractions are going to happen, how can you use them as a positive opportunity in your business and with your team to improve from here, and so that it doesn't kind of get you down and set you back. But you use it as an opportunity to grow and improve your business and become more efficient. He has kind of three main points that he talks about as far as kind of how to use distractions as opportunities. And the first is identifying and acknowledging the distraction. So instead of, denial is not just a river in Egypt, you say, okay, how can I use this as an opportunity to really kind of take a critical eye at my business, my processes, or my team, or our product, and look for ways that I can improve it, and use this a little bit as kind of like an internal alert to say, okay, hey, this is really something that needs to be addressed. How can I address this, and how can I take steps to improve it or iterate it or change it so that maybe this doesn't happen again?
Yep. So a couple of a distraction could really be anything. A distraction is basically something that's unexpected. And so I'll give you an example of something that was unexpected. This happened a while ago. This goes back to Support Vine days. So the very first guy that I had hired, he was going along, and then I realized at some point I needed to really get rid of him, but I just wasn't doing anything about it. And it wasn't until one day that he had shared something with me and had put all of this code into the repository, and then I downloaded it and started working with it and realized just everything was broken. And I wasn't expecting this. Like I wanted to just go in and test, but like nothing worked. And I was so frustrated. I mean, my first, reaction to that whole thing was like, I got to fire this guy. He's a jerk. But, you know, from that unexpected, okay, what the hell is happening here moment turned into this, well, why didn't this show up in my test server here as working code? Like, what was it in our process that completely broke down that he wasn't able to follow or that he didn't put into place, that all of a sudden I can't get a testable set of code that I can go and actually look at. So that made me realize that there was just a massive amount of process documentation that I was lacking. So between my first developer and my second developer, I wrote a whole bunch of things that said, this is what I expect. And when I say we're moving to this test server, I expect it to be in this sort of a state. And if I hadn't had that one day where I was like so pissed off and it just completely derailed my thinking because I was going to dedicate that entire day to going through the application and trying to figure out what the hell is working and what isn't and what is smooth and how could we improve all of this stuff, I literally got none of that done because the whole thing just wouldn't come up. And the guy was just being sloppy about it, and he thought everything was good, and then he took off. And it took like 48 hours to get a hold of him. So the whole thing was a complete nightmare. But it was that moment that made me realize I need to go and actually put that documentation in place and then, of course, fire this guy because he wasn't working.
Right.
But that documentation made it so that the next time I came around, those processes were much smoother. And then the two guys that followed him were able to put code up on that server knowing exactly what I had to expect. So –
yeah,
that was a good learning experience for me, although it certainly sucked at the time. As in Brian's story specifically relates exactly to that. For him, it sucked. He had somebody who was leaving on vacation for a period of time, and she gave him lots and lots of notice. And Brian was just like, I'll just take care of it. So she's gone, and then all of a sudden stuff is breaking down because he didn't realize just how much he had offloaded onto her and how much it would take away from him to pick up all those pieces. And that's when he realized he needed to have better process documentation himself around things that are in audience ops to fix that. So,
yeah. Yeah. I think to the specific point here, I think it's a little unfair for any of us to expect that, like, you could, a developer or a project manager or whatever could leave your business and you could just go hire somebody the next week and bring them in and it would be seamless. I think that's big companies can do that decently. but no, I mean,
I'm sorry. No, I yeah. Maybe some companies can. I think that all companies have a hard time to pulling that off.
Just hiring people
trained up to speed. I don't think that a big company is a better chance of doing that than the small ones. Sorry, I couldn't hold that in.
No. So that's interesting. So a lot of the companies had weeks or months long training programs. So you would just go somewhere for like 2 weeks, several times within the first 6 months to train. And we sure as shit don't do that. I mean, we have a Google Doc and a bunch of screen captures that walk through kind of the gist of what we do. But, for you, your developer, for me, Becky, our project manager, I mean, they do so much that's not documented. And I think the lesson is the more you can standardize what you do and have it be understandable for anyone, the better off you are. And frankly, the less reliant on that person you are. If things go sideways, you don't feel terrible about having to kind of part ways for regardless of whose decision or who initiates it.
Yeah, you should have processes, not personalities in place. It's great to have a personality that can handle anything that you can throw at them, but as soon as they're gone, you lose all of that. So
yeah,
you've got to have something in place that gets that. So back to your point about the whole hiring thing, I think there's a definite disconnect on some positions. Like if you tried to hire for something that you can, set up a bunch of processes for in advance and go through the 6-week training program, I think that's great. I was thinking of more the front end funnel, like just getting candidates in that are worthwhile to go through the training in the first place. That's the hard part. And so when you said, oh, we could just hire somebody and get them, I was like, if my experience has been any indicator of how difficult it is to hire, saying that you could turn around and get somebody in 6 weeks and have them trained up is very, very contingent on what kind of candidates just happen to be available at that time. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're getting off track here.
No, for sure. I think it's an important point, though. But yeah.
The second point that Brian really brings up is that you want to deal with this distraction so that you never have to deal with it again. So our temptation when something comes up is, I want to get this off my plate, make it go away. The problem is, if you do that and you don't fix the root cause of what caused that particular distraction, it's just going to come back to bite you again and again and again and again and again. So here's a great example that I ran into with Business Directory recently.
Plugin so releases? Bobby,
no. This is not another. Okay. Boom. Solid burn. All right. Thanks.
It goes both ways.
Yeah. So I was thinking about some support issues that we had. So there was this one thing where we put out something with our categories plugin, and I guess it broke on it was a combination of things that made it break. So it was an older version of Business Directory, a certain older version of Enhanced Categories, and then using it on desktop with certain themes. So if you had the right mixture, which apparently a lot of people had the right mixture, then their column settings were not honored. So if you said display my categories in like five columns, it would show them in two. So everybody was pissed off about that. And the problem was that, you know, at first we thought it was just the enhanced category. So we tried to patch that and then we had to send that out. And then later we thought it was the Business Directory. It turned out it was the combination of both. But then there was like this whole thing back and forth where Bobby and I were struggling, trying to figure out, okay, well, what is it we need to send to them? And then I realized, okay, stop thinking like reactively here. Just proactively send them everything, get them up to the latest of everything, and you won't be dealing with this anymore. And then we had to also write a little snippet for it because it kept coming up and up and up. And so Bobby was asking me, well, what should I do here? Well, what should I do here? I was like, oh, it's the same as this guy over here. And I wasn't thinking in terms of how do I keep this from coming up again without me having to think about it. I was thinking of just make this one support ticket go away. So you definitely have to think a little bit broader picture and longer term to get these distractions off your plate like once and forevermore. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, this when we have kind of improved our business, that's exactly what we do. And we say, what are the things that come up over and over and over? And they come up with a rule to say, okay, you know, editing team, when this happens, this kind of thing happens, this is what you should do. Writers or project manager, when this kind of thing happens, this is what you should do. And then every time, like, that pays off for ever almost, right? It's like a little product that I keep getting paid for over and over and over. It's less of my time, more of their autonomy, faster for us to turn things around, and a better product in the end. But I think, again, it's only if you can kind of acknowledge this is a real problem. It's not the first time we've heard this, so we'll come up with a process and a solution for it that everyone will follow all the time, and that'll take you out of this distraction coming back in the future too.
Yep.
Yeah, and so the last point Brian makes here is leveraging the byproduct of the distraction and hopefully what you came up with this solution so that you and your business will benefit from this kind of going forward, right?
Yep. So as an indirect byproduct of that whole category thing, I had Bobby actually go through and try to find, you know, where are all the places in our documentation that people are struggling with, like you're going into things and you're finding there's an error here, there's a missing image here, because this was sort of like indirectly causing all of this stuff, because people would go into our documentation, they'd look for it, and they'd be like, well, I found this old article and it's not really right. And we'd look at that article and go, well, it's kind of outdated. We really ought to do something about that and update it. But it didn't occur to me right away, like, just collect all this stuff into one issue, put it into something, and then sit down for like a day and do all these documentation corrections so they can just get it off the plate altogether, completely and absolutely. Mm-hmm. Another one that I had with AWPCP, I had like three people in one week come complain to me about the showcase and say, hey, Dave, you know, there's a lot of 404 errors in here and stuff like that. So, you know, I responded to the first one and said, yeah, sorry about that. Sometimes, you know, showcase links go away. People shut down their sites. They don't tell us. And then the second one came up, I said them the same thing. And then the third one, I'm like, oh, wait a minute here. Maybe I shouldn't just be answering this. Maybe I should actively try to get out and get the sites. So I've got a task on my list now to go and build a whole list of new showcase sites. So I've got to send out an email to go ask for anybody who wants to be on there and then try to actively find some classified sites that are using it. But it was that moment of, I need to get a byproduct out of this that fixes this damn thing forever, which in this case is building the showcase. So how about you? You got anything like that?
We classify that one under the it's not you, it's me thing, right?
Yeah, it's totally about me. Yeah.
No, so I mean, I think that we've approached this iteratively. So this kind of thing happens in a service business all the time, kind of. You come up with different types of customers and their requests and the different specific needs that they have, to where we have kind of just a framework of decisions around this that each of the kind of groups within our business know and understand and kind of abide by. But yeah, I mean, a year ago or 2 years ago when we were at this point, it was, everything was one off. And so we've been doing this for, 2 years now to now, fortunately, or better or worse, I guess, I don't have a lot of these that come up. I think if a big part of our team was going to be gone for 2 or 3 weeks, then things like this would come up. But we've been fortunate to be in the situation where we were forced to address this stuff early on and kind of on a regular basis as we were growing. And now that we are staffed properly and our capacity is kind of at stasis, it's kind of smoother sailing at this point. So I guess that's good news, bad news. Bad news that we're not growing so crazily that we need a whole bunch of new processes and people. But that's a whole nother story.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's positive things about being on a plateau, and one of them is that your support is not going batshit crazy. So
yeah, for sure.
So what kind of distractions have you turned into opportunities? Why don't you shoot us an email, podcast@roguestartups.com, and tell us about something that you've done, and we'll chat about it a little more on the show. And also, if you have a chance, we'd love to get a review from you in iTunes. There's a link in the bottom of the show notes. Until next week.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.